compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Can't quite believe it's Monday morning all over again. It's kind of like Groundhog's Day. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Things are continuing to evolve with regard to COVID-19 and the masks and the vaccines. And as you know, we try to keep you updated on the latest as it develops. So this morning we have for you a little bit of audio. This first one, I believe, Cyrus, correct me if I'm wrong, this is Dr. Fauci. He's on CNN, and he's discussing, I guess, what we could call for shorthand mask mandates. Is that the first one?
Yeah, that's right. So he's talking about how we are going in the wrong direction. So he's talking about mask mandates, but he's also talking about how with the numbers of unvaccinated people, the United States will be going in the wrong, we are going in the wrong direction.
Okay, so let's listen to what Dr. Fauci has to say on this issue.
We're going in the wrong direction. If you look at the inflection of the curve of new cases, and as you said in the run-in to this interview, that it is among the unvaccinated. And since we have 50% of the country is not fully vaccinated, that's a problem, particularly when you have a variant like Delta, which has this extraordinary characteristic of being able to spread very efficiently and very easily from person to person. And we know we have many, many, many vulnerable people in this country who are unvaccinated. And that's the reason why, as I've said so many times, we have the tools to blunt that and make that model wrong. But if we don't vaccinate people, the model is going to predict that we're going to be in trouble as we continue to get more and more cases.
And almost entirely the victims will be unvaccinated Americans?
Well, yes, Jake, that's the issue. And that's the thing that sometimes gets confusing to people. If you are vaccinated, the vaccine is highly protective against the Delta variant, particularly against severe disease leading to hospitalization and sometimes ultimately to death. So it really is, as Dr. Walensky has said many times, and I've said, it's really an outbreak among the unvaccinated. So this is an issue predominantly among the unvaccinated, which is the reason why we're out there practically pleading with the unvaccinated people to go out and get vaccinated. And that's the reason why it's very heartening and positive to hear people like Governor Asa Hutchinson and others to go out there in their own state and say, hey, let's get vaccinated, because that's really the solution to this.
About a month ago, we saw President Biden and a number of governors across the country, Democrats and Republicans, saying that the virus was in retreat. In retrospect, that sure seems premature.
Well, it certainly is in retreat among the vaccinated, Jake, and it gets back to what we've been saying. It's kind of like we have two kinds of America. We have the very vulnerable unvaccinated part, and we have the really relatively protected vaccinated part. So if you are vaccinated, you are really in a very different category than someone who's not vaccinated.
Two kinds of America. That I find that rhetoric troublesome. But I can see where he's coming from. I don't share necessarily all of his conclusions. What I wonder about, Cyrus, and I keep saying this, I wonder why they don't talk about the people who already have natural immunity from having contracted COVID. So the people by the millions and millions, and I'm not sure what the total number is, but I'm assuming it may be as few as 100 million people in this country who have natural immunity from COVID because they've gotten it, and they're never mentioned. It's just the unvaccinated, as if that were one category that described everybody. And I've talked to physicians about this. I've asked questions. Well, you know, what about the people who have contracted COVID? They survived it, as did 98%, I guess, of people who contracted it. And they have the natural antibodies. What about them? Are they in danger of contracting it again? Are they in danger of passing it on if they already have the natural immunities? And I find that silence on that particular topic curious. Unless you're hearing it somewhere else that I'm not hearing it.
I am not hearing that anywhere. I think that's the million-dollar question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it gets to the issue of herd immunity, doesn't it? Where if enough people have either the natural immunity because they've contracted it and now they're immune to it for who knows how long, and the people who have been vaccinated who have this mRNA spike protein information in their bodies now, I would think that between the two, we would be pretty much in the clear. So we raised this for you to listen to what Dr. Fauci is saying. He, of course, is the sort of the official spokesman on this topic. But along with the information he gives, there's a lot of questions that he doesn't seem to address, and I don't know why. I'd like to hear him say something about that. So now let's go to maybe sort of more policy related in terms of what about this two kinds of America and this other kind. I get the feeling, Cyrus, that there is an orchestrated effort underway over time with this kind of thing to prepare to scapegoat people and to scapegoat the unvaccinated, you know, this one giant category of people, many of whom may already have the natural antibodies, as I said, that there's this effort being made to kind of prepare the way to start scapegoating people. And if I'm predicting things correctly, I would think that the first step in that direction would be to just make life very difficult for people who have chosen not to get vaccinated. And by the way, everybody, before you start writing an angry email, just understand I'm not telling people not to get vaccinated. Okay, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that for those people who, for whatever reason, are reluctant to get vaccinated, I foresee that times are going to get very difficult for people who, for whatever reason, decide not to get vaccinated. And maybe what Andy Slavitt has to say on CNN. Is this on? No. Yeah, it's on CNN. He's talking about this and what he recommends should be done with the quote-unquote unvaccinated. Let's listen.
According to the CDC, 57% of those eligible are fully vaccinated in the United States. Now, given those percentages and the vigor of the Delta variant, what more does the administration need to be doing right now?
Well, it was great to see in the town hall last night that President Biden is not willing to quit, not willing to leave any American behind, and willing to continue to make the case. Now, it's going to take more than him to make the case. It's going to take getting very aggressive about particularly younger people, people under 25. I think we, as they return to school, presuming we have full FDA approval, we should be really seriously considering whether schools, workplaces, government agencies ought to be talking about saying, hey, if you're coming here, you need to be vaccinated. And if you're not, you need to show you've got a negative test every single day. And then we need to just get better information to people. And as the FDA makes this final approval, all the people that have been on the fence, and there are some people that are still on the fence, we need to take the case to them and say, the jury is in. The FDA has done rigorous work. They've taken a long time, a very long time. And now it's time for you to review this information and make the right decision.
I mean, just so I'm clear, employers are allowed to decide everybody who works here has to be vaccinated, right?
Absolutely. And look, if people say they don't want to be vaccinated, which some people might say, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say that's fine, but we'd like you to show up every morning an hour before work and get a negative test, maybe even at your own expense, until the point where people will say, you know what, it makes more sense to actually get vaccinated. So if you give people that option, I think you're going to see more and more people take the option to get vaccinated.
Andy Slavitt, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Make life more difficult for them. 888-914-9149. We have lines open. Well, not too many lines open, but you can grab one if you call now. 888-914-9149. Let's start off with Jan in Chicago. Hi, Jan.
Hey, hi, good morning. Yes,
good morning.
I just wanted to say I am so tired of hearing about this, Patrick. I am fed up with it. I am a nurse at a south side of Chicago hospital. Mm-hmm. We have to wear a mask there. I personally am not vaccinated. I don't plan on getting vaccinated. This is still an experimental drug that has not been approved. It was only approved for the emergency part of it. The emergency part is over.
I
had COVID. I survived it, and I agree with you. The CDC needs to come out and say who's had COVID does not need to get the vaccine. Then they said it was only for the older people or this population. Now I have a niece who's trying to go to college who can't get into her college unless she gets vaccinated. Well, this is ridiculous. She's 19 years old. We don't even know what this is going to do to her fertility. I mean, there's so many unanswered questions, and all I ever hear is get vaccinated, wear a mask, do this. I feel it's all fear-mongering. I feel this is all to just get us ready for socialism. That's
well,
what it is.
Let me ask you this question, Jen. Have you faced any, I don't know, reprisals, recriminations from your employer because you have chosen not to be vaccinated? Or have they sort of left you alone?
I have not yet, but my hospital is going under a change. We are being taken over by a much bigger corporation hospital because we are just a small community hospital. And I have heard that it's going to be mandated, I feel, that I've heard, as once FDA approves it. Now, when the Novavax comes out, that one I would take. There's nothing in there tainted. But you have to ask yourself, this is the question I always ask, why are they pushing it so bad? Why? Why? What's the agenda?
What I've heard is that the reason that it's being pushed so strongly is because that is the solution to avoid further deaths and other problems with regard to the coronavirus. Now, on the surface, that seems reasonable. But to go back to what I was saying and what you've touched upon here, what about people who have already had the coronavirus, who have natural immunity, they have the antibodies, and as I understand it, at least, they're not susceptible to getting it or giving it. If they already have that level of protection, then what is the need for them to be vaccinated as well? Boris Johnson, for example, the Prime Minister of England, he had COVID, he survived it, he's been vaxxed, and because he was in the presence of somebody who tested positive, he's now in 2 weeks of quarantine. I don't understand that. It doesn't make sense to me, and I'm not hearing any clear answers.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Even if you're testing positive for it, many people, I'm sure, are walking around asymptomatic, so why are we still testing? Wait till the people come in if they're sick. I mean, you know, not just because you're positive doesn't mean you're going to die and get it. And this is what is fear-mongering to the population. Oh, my gosh, you're positive, get away, blah, blah, blah. I mean, in my mind, they're just pushing it way too much. There's an underlying agenda. It hasn't been tested. You can't give it to 19-year-olds and people who are able to bear children unless they're ready that they don't want them to bear children. They don't know that study yet.
Well,
so why push that
there's
on
a, there's a real strong kids? Push, Jan. There's a real strong push to start vaccinating children, you know, under the age of 10.
And that's wrong.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. My concern, and I appreciate your phone call, Jan, my concern is the danger for starting to scapegoat people and turn them into the boogeyman, that it's those quote-unquote unvaccinated people. Now, again, public service announcement. I'm not telling you, I'm not even suggesting to you not to get vaccinated. Please understand. But these are some of the troubling anomalies in this continuing narrative, big holes in which I'm seeing where there seems to be very little by way of attention to this question about what about the people who have already got it. And we'll find out as time goes on. Let's go to Jim in Elk Mound, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Patrick. I was calling to ask you, in light of the Biden's effectively open border policy, we're having between 125,000 to 180,000 people coming across the border. Do you think that's increasing? Because it seems like this variant and everything else is increasing, and it seems to coincide with all of the people being shipped all over the country.
Interesting question. Now, I don't know if there's a cause and effect. I would think there probably must be some cause and effect, but how significant is it? I don't know. I've never seen any statistics, so I can only conjecture. But I would think that if you've got What is the figure? 1.6 million people or something to that effect that have come into this country illegally in recent months, that the chances are pretty good. Probably many of them have not yet been vaccinated. And if that's the case, then are they contributing to this Delta variant or some of the other variants? I don't think it's unreasonable to ask that question, but I don't know the answer. I guess Dr. Fauci will have to tell us because I haven't seen any statistics on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, if we have news on that, I'll let you know.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, Jim. I didn't mean to talk over you. Did you want to make a point?
No, I just was thinking that it seems like that no one wants to discuss that, and it's almost like
I do.
the elephant in the living room, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah, and that's, you know, the dangers there are, of course, because that is so highly politicized, the immigration debate and people coming across the border and the super strong feelings on both sides of that. that you take an already volatile and electric topic and then you throw that into the mix, it just becomes, I think for some people, it's just, they're not able to talk about it because it just weaves too many strong issues together. But we'll see, Jim. And I promise you, I'll do the very best I can to stay abreast of these issues. And if I do run across some bona fide, verifiably legitimate, accurate data, I will definitely share it with you on this program. Thank you. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Paul in Long Beach, California. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Patrick. A little bit like Jan, the previous caller kind of spoke what I'm thinking about, is mm-hmm. that the unvaccinated also are a lot of people waiting for the first wave to be analyzed, you know, this Moderna, Pfizer, these other ones. Mm-hmm. So they're waiting for good science to so that the next rollout of vaccines that comes out has researched the shortcomings of its predecessors. That's not being articulated anywhere, that some people are just waiting, and they're also waiting for Charlotte Lozier type, you know, fully approved. And mm-hmm. that's, I would probably, I think a good portion, maybe the majority of people are just waiting for making a calculated decision to run the risk of getting Delta over not getting jabbed with an inferior medication.
I'm sure there must be some of them who fit that description. I'm sure there are some who say, I don't want this in any case. I mean, from time to time, we hear from people, Paul, I think Friday we heard from somebody who's convinced that there's a microchip in the vaccine. And I pointed out, I absolutely do not believe that's the case. And they'll say, well, what about Bill Gates' anti-population agenda? And that's real. He's on the record. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has funded anti-population measures in somewhat covert ways. And I understand that that's a reality, but I think that too is another reason. I would say that there are many reasons that those who haven't gotten vaccinated haven't done so. But the point you're making is certainly valid, that there are people who may be waiting for the next iteration to come out so they've got a little extra safety margin, or so they would hope anyway.
Well, more ethical too, because Charlotte has not. I don't know if any of the first five really have a super clean bill. Where the lady mentioned Novavax coming out, I think does, and Ocugen. So I just wanted to mention that.
No,
it's not
it's
all
good point.
Just fear of vaccines.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, thank you, Paul. Great to talk to you. Let's take a break and we'll come back with more of your phone calls. We do have looks like we have a couple lines open. You can grab one by calling now, 888-914-9149. Plenty else to talk about. This is not the vaccine show. We just want to keep you up to date on that topic. And I've got other things I want to get into, including the draft. How would you feel about your daughter being drafted for military service? Drafted. I don't mean volunteering. I mean drafted. We'll talk about that as well on the other side of this quick break.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back, and we do have the beat, that's for sure. The number is 888-914-9149. I want to toss this into the mix. We don't have to spend endless time talking about it, but I want to bring you up to speed on this. The Senate panel, Senate Armed Services Committee, to be exact, has approved language in its annual defense policy bill that would require women to register for the draft. Now, this article is from The Hill. There's another article on the same topic from The Daily Wire by Amanda Prestigiacomo. Same topic, somewhat, a few other details are covered in that article. But as for this, the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, approved by the committee behind closed doors Wednesday of last week, amends the Military Selective Service Act to require the registration of women for selective service. The United States has not instituted a draft since the Vietnam War, and Pentagon officials have repeatedly said they intend to keep the force all volunteer, but men ages 18 through 25 still have to register with what's officially known as the Selective Service System or face consequences such as losing access to federal financial aid for college. I remember when I turned 18. And that was only a few years after Vietnam ended. So I turned 18 in 1978. The draft ended in 73 and the war was over by 75. So I missed all of that. And yet when I turned 18, that was the thing. And every young man since then is supposed to go into the post office and get the yellow card. They were yellow when I did mine. I don't know what color they are now. And you fill out the information, and this is where the military can find me. If Uncle Sam needs me, here's my home address and here's my phone number. Nowadays, I suppose it would require your email address, what have you. But that's de rigueur. That's standard. And all American young men have done that, or at least should have done that. Congress has been debating whether to expand the registration requirement to women since all combat jobs were open to female service members in 2016. In that year, both the House and the Senate Armed Services Committee included a requirement for women to register in their initial versions of the NDAA. I remember talking about that back in 2016. It was a hot button issue for me then. It's a hot button issue for me now. Because I have at least one granddaughter who's old enough now to be drafted, if this should go through. And I have one daughter left, my youngest daughter. She's not my youngest child, but she's my youngest daughter. And she's in her early 20s. So she's in that zone where if they do this, then at least in the next couple of years, year or two, she would be eligible to be drafted as well. The House's version of the bill dropped the language before the bill came to the floor after some pushed to exclude the language during negotiations between the House and the Senate. The version of the NDAA that ultimately became law instead created a new commission to review the draft registration requirement. So they've been reviewing and reviewing and reviewing, and it's back at this level again. And they're now, I think, seriously considering pushing this forward, and it may well wind up being that women will be drafted. I don't know how you feel about that. I don't like it. I think it's unnecessary, and I don't want to see women being drafted. And I don't just mean my women. I don't mean just my daughter or granddaughter. I'm talking about you and your children as well. And this is where we're running into a real difficulty now more than ever, because as you know, things have metastasized so much so that to even say that there's a difference between men and women, or even just what is a man and what is a woman, half the country now won't even accept that layer of reality. They just push back against it because they don't like it. Science be damned, of course, in their eyes. So to even talk about the idea of women not being suited for combat roles, and yes, I know that the military already has that opened up for them. I'm just saying for a woman to be drafted. I'm not saying women shouldn't serve in the military. I value and esteem those who serve in the military. I have no problem with it, nothing against it whatsoever, if they choose to do so. But if the government says, if we find ourselves at war with China or some other wartime situation and we reactivate the draft, it could happen. It could happen. There's no reason why it couldn't happen. And if they say we're going to reactivate the draft and now we're going to draft your daughters, they may not want to go to war. Your daughter may be planning to get married or your daughter may be planning to go to college. And who knows what deferments might be granted. I don't know. That would remain to be seen. But the bare naked fact of the government saying we're going to draft women irks me. And it irks me because women and men are different. And because, I mean, all the different things that go into it. And I, by the way, full transparency here, I've never served in the military. I was too young for Vietnam and I was too old for everything else. So I was born at the time when it wasn't there. Now, I suppose I could have enlisted, and I even did look into that at one time. I took the ASVAB test and I talked to a recruiter and all that. But by that point, I was already married and had a couple of kids, and it just seemed as though it wouldn't really work as far as my family duties. So just to let you know where I'm coming from, I'm not a veteran, but I still have a stake in all of this, and I want to see the right thing done. So I'm raising this on your radar screen right now so that you'll be aware that this is now percolating again, and it's percolating at a fairly high level, the Armed Services Committee in Congress. And if it gets through that, and if it gets to a vote, I would not be surprised if in the not too distant future, the current government being what it is, and the current state of affairs being what it is, by way of gender ideology nowadays, don't be surprised if women are now eligible for the draft. Now, that's not saying that they will be drafted, of course, because there is no draft right now. This is just simply debating whether or not, if the draft does get reactivated at some point, would women then be eligible for the draft? And I think the foregone conclusion is in the not too distant future, it will be yes. So I'm raising my voice now. I'm making you aware of it now. And if you've got a high school daughter who's 16, 17, 18 years of age, this might be the kind of thing to talk to her about. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Pat in Phoenix. Good morning, Pat. Is it over 100 degrees yet this morning?
Not, I don't think yet, but okay. The humidity is what's real. Humidity is going to be bad because we've had so much rain.
Oh boy.
But it's okay. Patrick, I'm not calling to pat myself on the back or anyone else. That's not at all my intent. And I don't know what you can gain from it, but I wasn't going to call and all of a sudden my number was up.
Okay.
So the reason I'm calling is because I work for Catholic cemeteries, and during the pandemic, in the quarantine especially, I received a phone call from my boss, and very kind, and said, you know, because things are so bad right now, and you are, you know, in a vulnerable point, because I'm a little older, I don't have to work, and we'll get paid for it. And I thought about it, and I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. They don't have the people to cover, and, you know, God's will be done. So I worked. I have continued to work all through that and in a somewhat vulnerable position. My daughter, who is a, and I guess I'm bringing that up, thinking to myself, you know, I've done this at the worst times, and maybe a lot of us have antibodies. Well, my daughter is a ER nurse, or I guess you call it an ED nurse, and I'm following up what the other nurse kind of said. But what I wanted to say is she worked here in the system, in the ED, and was a nurse educator. She was working in the university teaching for a while.
I hope we don't run out of time, Pat. I hope we don't run out of time.
So anyway, she worked in the worst hospital in New York, in Manhattan, during the pandemic. Got there, there was hardly any staff there, the computers weren't set up, and she worked there for 13 weeks straight. And I was scared to death, but she came home, and thank God everything was okay. Then they asked her to work in Indian Hospital on the reservation, and she did that for 13 weeks. She came back to Phoenix, and I did say to her at one point, I said, honey, when did you get the vaccine? Because I figured all the front runners got the vaccine. And she said, you know, Mom, I will not condemn anyone that doesn't. I, you know, as a Christian, everybody has their choice. But, or I shouldn't say the word choice. But she said, you know, Mom, I'm not going to get it. And I have my reasons for it, but I don't condemn anyone else that has.
Did she disclose what her reasons are?
No, she didn't really go into it. She figured I'd probably repeat it to everybody else.
Are they scientific reasons or religious reasons, or she doesn't like needles reasons, or do you have a clue? I'm just curious because, especially for her working in that field, I would think that life would be extremely difficult for those who decide not to get the vaccine.
She's been in the worst. I can't think of the hospital in Manhattan that she was in for 13 weeks, but it was bad. And people were on, you know, in the halls, they were everywhere.
Right. And so what's the cash value here, Pat? You mentioned that you don't want to pat yourself on the back, but go ahead. What's the cash value here?
Maybe some of us have antibodies. And if we've been in the worst of the situations and feel like, you know, it's okay. I don't want to get it because I've never gotten the flu shot. My daughter has a daughter who's in a wheelchair and has 17 surgeries, and she still feels confident not to give her the vaccine or her other daughter or herself. I know there's a lot of it, a lot of the medical to it that she won't get it. And I think a lot of people feel that way. I personally just feel like there's something inside me that says, I don't want to take it.
Well, here's the thing, Pat, I've got to move forward, but I foresee the day coming soon when, regardless of what your reasons are or your daughter's or your next door neighbor's, it will get to the point where life will be made so miserable for the people who decide not to get vaccinated that they'll just say, all right, I give, uncle. And it's, I mean, there's some people who say, I'll never do it. And okay. But I think most people, you heard the guy earlier who was saying on CNN, he was saying that, you know, okay, you don't want to get vaccinated, no problem. We'll just make you come in an hour early every day to work and get tested every day, and probably at your own expense, knowing that that would be so onerous and burdensome that the average person would just say, all right, okay, give me the shot. I'd rather have that than this. And I see things moving in that direction. So we'll see what happens. Maybe we should talk again in 6 months, Pat, and tell me what your thoughts are at that point. Same with your daughter. I wish you both well, and I appreciate your phone call. Thank you. Let's go to Dave now in Poinette, Wisconsin. Good morning, Dave.
Yes. Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. First off, sure. I just want to say I don't think they want herd immunity. They want herd mentality. But
interesting, yeah.
The question that I have for you is, have you yourself found a documented case or a study where actual viable COVID has been collected airborne? Because I was listening to an interview of a director of a London boys choir about a year ago, probably, and he said at that time that there was no proof that it was airborne. It had never been documented. And twice I've looked on Google to try and find a documented case, and everything I found talks about theoretical, you know, droplets traveling in air streams. I haven't found anything that said that they actually did capture viable COVID from the air. I did find one where they said they tested some air filters in a building and they found the DNA from COVID. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, have you actually found proof?
No, I haven't been. I have not scoured the peer-reviewed journals on this issue. I try to stay current as best I can. I do know one thing. Yesterday, I came across, and boy, I wish I could find it, and I may be able to find it. We'll see. But I found yesterday a commentary given by Dr. Fauci in 2020, and as I recall correctly, it was like late summer or early summer 2020. And he was saying masks don't really work. He says the size of the corona, or the COVID-19 virus is way smaller than the size of the openings in the face masks that people typically are wearing, like to go to the grocery store. He says it can easily pass through. He says at best it can offer some protection against respiratory droplets being passed along. So with regard to the masks and the question that you're asking me, I would have to pitch that to the people, you know, in the peer-reviewed medical journals for that. I'm sure it wouldn't be difficult to find, but I myself have not found that. Otherwise, I would have brought it to your attention if I had. But I don't think it would be difficult for you to find out.
Well, like I say, I've done searches like 3-4 pages deep on Google, and, you know, I don't know any other better way to do it. If any listeners have got, you know, something they could point out, if you could post a link or something, you know, I think it's being taken for granted that it's airborne, and, you know, I don't even think that's been proven. And like you say, the masks, I mean, if you take cologne or perfume and rub it on your mask, you're going to smell it. So the aerosols are getting through it.
Yeah, I don't think so, though. I don't think it's I think everything that I have seen is very strongly showing that it is airborne. Now, can it survive on surfaces? You may remember when early last year, there was a lot of emphasis on not touching things and washing your hands frequently and not touching your face. You notice you never hear anything about that much anymore. And we heard a lot about how you should sanitize products that you get from the grocery store before you bring them into your home. You don't hear anything about that anymore. So whereas I think there's some incidence of the coronavirus lingering on surfaces, I think the big majority of it seems to be airborne, hence the mask mandate. So anyway, thank you, Dave. I'll keep you informed of anything that I come up with on that that's legitimate and mainstream. I'll tell you about it. Thank you. 888-914-9149.
Isn't it kind of weird to think about wiping everything down? You would get groceries and you'd have them delivered in your garage, right? And then you'd spray them and wipe them down.
I used to do that. And I didn't do it for long. I did it for about a month or so.
Yeah.
At the height of the hysteria.
Fever. That's right. Mm-hmm. I remember.
So we would get, what do we use? Instacart. So we would use Instacart. And the Instacart delivery person would bring the bags of grocery, would bring it to our garage. And I think I mentioned this on the program. I would stand in the garage and I would have the Clorox wipes and I would wipe every single yep. package of everything before it came into the house. And then after a while, we realized we don't need to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we were doing, I think a lot of people were doing that kind of thing.
Oh, tons. Yeah, that was was that in the flatten the curve phase?
I think that flatten the curve is probably a better term for going on a diet. That's what I thought it was at first, flatten the curve. But
all right, back to the calls.
We don't do the sanitizing of the items anymore. I think we'll take a break now, and then we'll come back and do more phone calls. We've got another Black Lives Matter story in the news right now, and I have a question I want to ask you about this. It has to do with people disrespecting a Black Lives Matter mural, and I have a question about that. I will ask you when we return. My number is 888-914-9149. How would you feel if somebody disrespected a Black Lives Matter mural? We'll talk about that on the other side of this quick timeout. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
We are back. I told you that I had a little something for you about Black Lives Matter, so let's talk about that briefly. If you want to get into it, my number is 888-914-9149. I will be going back to phone calls in just a moment. Police in Santa Cruz, California, said they've arrested two suspects in the alleged defacing of a Black Lives Matter mural on Center Street with treadmarks. And there's a picture, so you can see it for yourself. It's one of these big street murals. So it's painted on the street itself, and you can see somebody burned rubber over most of this, like, block-long Black Lives Matter mural. Santa Cruz Police Department have arrested two people on suspicion of defacing this mural painted on a street in downtown Santa Cruz, according to investigators. And I'm sharing this with you courtesy of the San Francisco Chronicle, so we'll get a link to the article if you want to see the picture and see the reporting. The mural at 800 Center Street was defaced with vehicle treadmarks late Friday, according to authorities. The targeted vandalism of the mural is heartbreaking and violating, Santa Cruz Mayor Donna Meyer said Sunday. Brandon Bochat, 20, of Santa Cruz, and Hagen Warner, 19, of Boulder Creek, were seen on video provided by law enforcement by community members burning out or intentionally, that's a phrase I haven't heard in a long time, burning out. Or intentionally applying vehicle treadmarks to the length of the mural. The two took turns driving over the mural, according to police. They said this was an intentional act of vandalism on something that our community holds dear. For those who seek to minimize the events that took place, shame on you. This was meaningful to this community, and we will do everything within our power to make sure those who did this are brought to justice. City Manager Martin Bernal said the city is working closely with the Santa Cruz Equity Collaborative, the organization that originally helped create the mural, to repair the damage as soon as possible. He added the work is still in progress. The staff does not have specific dates for completion yet. It's Monday. The two suspects were arrested and booked on felony vandalism charges. Both were released on bail. Okay. I have a question. Isn't it ironic that during the height of the Black Lives Matter protests all around the country, many, many of them, as you most likely saw on CNN or Fox News or whatever your news outlet of choice is, and you saw over and over and over again Black Lives Matter protesters defacing federal and other public buildings with spray paint. They defaced public property, you know, things that we hold dear. Police Chief Andy Mills said, "This was an intentional act of vandalism on something that our community holds dear." Well, our communities all across the country hold other things that are dear. So what about the Black Lives Matter protesters, not to mention the Antifa freaks and the other people who were involved, who were defacing federal and other public property with spray paint, crowbars, etc.? What about the public statues that have been torn down and destroyed with impunity? And for that matter, isn't it considered free speech to burn American flags? But if someone dares burn a rainbow flag or burn rubber to deface a Black Lives Matter street painting, that's a huge deal and it must be punished as vigorously as possible and as quickly as possible. I see a problem with that. Now, I'm just pointing that out. And it'd be interesting to see how the Black Lives Matter acolytes will, on the one hand, defend their people destroying and defacing public property with impunity, with no repercussions at all. Tearing down statues, you name it. We've seen a whole year and a half worth of that stuff. And I don't remember too many people getting booked on felony vandalism charges. I think a lot of people are celebrated for doing that. So ask yourself a question. Why is it okay and even to be celebrated to tear down statues that are public property, that are dear to some members of the community? What about Abraham Lincoln? He should be dear to most Americans, and his statue is being taken down because, you know, he's a racist and all that. He's the guy who emancipated the slaves, but he's still a racist, or at least that's what they say. So that's okay, but it's not okay for some, you know, young guys to do something stupid and deface a Black Lives Matter street painting. That's where we are now. And I wanted to bring that to your attention. 888-914-9149. Let's get on to some other topics. Connie in Bayside, New York, it's good to have you on the program. Welcome. Hello, Connie.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry. That's I had a question about the Latin Mass and Sacro Sanctum Concilium.
Yes.
From the Second Vatican Council. I just started going to the Latin Mass about 4 years ago because I found it by accident when I went to a birthday party in another state. And then about 3 years ago, it came to my parish.
Pause for just a second. I want to make sure I understood you. They had a Latin Mass at a birthday party?
Oh, no. I was going to a birthday party at another state, the neighboring state, and I was looking for a Mass on Sunday.
Oh, and you had to go to Mass. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, and I came upon this parish, and they had Latin Masses, so I said, oh, I'll go there. So anyway, I used to go back every month or so because it's so beautiful. And then about 3 years ago, it came to my parish here in New York. But it was only on Sunday. It's like the Misa Cantata. And then a few months ago, we started saying it, the Low Latin Mass, on weekdays. The priest started saying it. And one of the... So, with regard to Sacro Sanctum Concilium and participation, like the way I feel about things is participation means your head and your heart, and maybe your lips, but not necessarily your lips. But anyway, the man who kind of runs this mass says that we have to, all the people, even though there's a couple altar boys there usually, we have to say the responses out loud in Latin or we're not in conformity with Sacro Sanctum Concilium. And it's fine with me. I can have it silent or I can have it out loud. But something happened that this became a bit of an issue. And so I was wondering, like, well, it was a priest came from a neighboring state. And he said a couple masses, and he said it the silent way. And this person, who's kind of like the leader, took objection to that.
Let's break this down. So he celebrated the new rite of the mass. Is that right? It wasn't the traditional Latin mass.
No, the low Latin mass.
Oh, he said so it was a Latin mass. Okay. And he... Okay, so here's the thing. The traditional Latin Mass does not follow that same rubric that was prescribed in Sacro Sanctum Concilium for the new rite of the Mass, which, as you know, encourages people to be fully engaged, and it also mandates that those parts of the Mass that the people recite, they say out loud. The old Mass doesn't do that, and in particular, the low Mass does not do that. That's why it's called a low Mass. It's called a low Mass because the priest speaks in a low voice and it's inaudible to the congregation, other than every so often when he turns and says, Dominus Vobiscum. I mean, there are a few times when he does address the congregation and the congregation responds, but other than that, it's in a low voice. So if the person was hopping up and down and angry because he wasn't following Sacro Sanctum Concilium. He doesn't realize that Sacro Sanctum Concilium, it regulates the celebration of the new rite of the Mass, not the old rite of the Mass. So the priest was entirely correct in doing it the way he did it.
Yeah. Okay, that was my feeling too, but I don't know that much about the Latin Mass. I wanted to ask you, but I mean, I think we're going to continue to do it his way, but at any rate, I felt bad that, you know, I didn't think that this priest from the neighborings, you know, who came to cover for our priest for a couple of days, I didn't think he did it wrong. I thought there's nothing wrong with that.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And I also think that isn't participation, like if you're reading along in whatever you feel happy with, Latin or English, as long as you're reading these beautiful prayers of the Latin Mass, that's participation in how I feel about it.
That's
a
form.
I don't think you have to be talking.
That's true. In some people have become very emotionally attached to certain things. You'll notice, for example, it started, as I recollect, in the early 70s when the priest would say, "Peace be with you." And earlier, before the revision, it was, "And also with you." Now it's been changed to be more accurate, "And with your spirit." Which you notice that some people, they'll kind of extend their hands out toward the priest when they say that. Lift up your hearts. We have lifted them up to the Lord. They'll raise their hands up into the air. And what has happened is since the 1970s, some people, maybe many, have become accustomed to certain gestures that they were told early on. And eventually they didn't have to be told because they saw other people doing it and they just liked it. And that was one of the things I remember being told to people in the early 1970s, that this will be a way for you to be more actively participating. So in addition to speaking out loud, you also gesture with your hands. And that has kind of taken root. And so many people, for them, that's when they think of active participation, that's what they think of. And it's a foreign idea for them to imagine that somebody could be intently participating with great ardor and yet not be making those hand gestures and not be speaking out loud necessarily. It's just a foreign idea to them. So my advice would be patient with them. Be patient with them. Recognize that they, you know, they've been catechized in a certain, I would say, maybe somewhat deficient way. That's what they know. So we have to be patient with them. But I'll leave it at that, Connie. Thank you for the call. And I'm glad to hear that you love the traditional Latin Mass. That's great. Let's go to Dante now in Houston. Good morning, Dante.
Good morning. I hope I can do a little bit better job repeating myself than I did saying it the first time. So in regards to the Black Lives Matter issue, so real quickly, when I didn't know anything at all many, many years ago, and I heard about the plight of various people, whether it was Mexico, you know, blacks in America, you know, people in India, whatever the case was, I always felt, you know, that, you know, what could I do to help? What would I do if I was in a position to do anything at all? My point for saying that is that as I get to know, like, Black Lives Matter, and you start to read what they're all about, which is basically a fascist anti-baby, you know,
anti-nuclear family.
You get kind of upset about it. And so I've turned my feelings are starting to turn. Not that I've lost my compassion and my that I don't see all of God's children as my brothers and sisters, but I'm starting to get irritated, you know, and I start to now have this kind of resentment in people trying to force issues that you know that are counterintuitive to the betterment of our society and people in general. So my point being is that we're in a really bad position whereby which we really have to start pushing back, digging and pushing back, and whatever that means, because whether we sit here and we tolerate it or we push back, the fight is coming.
Okay, so when you say whatever that means, I want to make sure that you're not suggesting violence or, you know, vigilantism or anything like that. That's not part of what you mean by anything goes, right?
No. I don't mean going out on one's own, volition and doing whatever they want to do. I don't want to turn into an Antifa. I don't want anybody turning into an Antifa.
Right.
I don't want anybody turning into Black Lives Matter. I, you know, this is a pro-human, pro-life, you know, make the best out of it as possible for everybody. But the reality is, like, as, and I was mentioning to the gentleman that I was speaking to that answered the phone, you know, the Democrat Party, not to jump tracks, but it's all part of the same issue. The Democrat Party is the spearhead right now of basically what is an anti-Christian movement. And everybody that is in that, you know, the percentages of those demographics they've imprisoned, if you will, of their mentalities, is all based on hate. You know,
I don't share those views, and I'm not a Democrat, for that matter. You know, I have nothing good to say about both parties, honestly. But in any case, the Democrats would say that's not true. It's not about hate. It's about trying to help other people. So yeah, they're going to push back against your pushback.
Yeah.
Dante, I've got to run. I wish we could talk longer. You're raising a very important thing, and I'm glad you did. I just wish we had more time. Call me again another time, please. I'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And you've heard about those Catholic churches and other churches in Canada being burned down. I have an update on that, too, right after this.